Oh, right. Good evening, everybody. This is term three, session three. Is that correct? Or term four, session?
No, three.
Spot on.
Three, is that correct? Yeah. Term three, session three. Wonderful to see you all. Okay. Has everyone got a everyone got a copy of the safe one? Got what they need? Has everyone got what they need? Yeah? Okay. Richard at the back. Welcome back, Richard at the back. It's such an honour to have you back, Richard at the back. It's actually Richard in the middle, technically, tonight, but it's only because of a geographic turnout, because of different types of attendance this week for those on the tape. Richard at the back, you got a copy of the sheet?
Yes.
Everyone got a copy of the sheet last week. And what I want to do is just quickly run through this sheet again. Oh, you okay? All good? We'll just run through this sheet again, just so we make sure exactly everyone's on point. And I ended up last time talking about the letter ches of chaim here on the parochus, if you remember. And this is the concept of transduction, which I'm going to come back on, okay? So here we are with the sheet. A little bit of a recap here for you all, and a bit of an introduction for Richard. Is we have four spheres, four worlds. These are the, as the Derech Hashem explains, there are four zones, general zones in creation. Now, Olam HaAtzilus, the world of nearness to God. Olam HaBria, the world of creation. Olam HaYetzira, the world of formation. And Olam HaAsiyah, the world of action. And the world of action is split into two zones. There's Olam HaAsiyah Elyon, the upper world of action, which is the celestial. And there's Olam HaAsiyah Tachton, obviously the lower world of action, which is the terrestrial. Now, the point, the most important element of it, well, one more thing, sorry. There's an arrow on the left. The further you go up the system, the more abstract, refined, spiritual, I'm going to add another word here, which I didn't put in at the time, conceptual. It's more conceptual at the top. It's more of a concept. While the further down you go, the more concretized, coarse, physical, and manifest. I'm adding in those extra words there. Conceptual and manifest. Here you go, basically. Okay. Now, last time we talked about, I ended up talking about the concept of transduction. Transduction is where you change one thing's state from one thing to another. So we talked about a CD. If you were to buy a CD of music, the question is, how is it that that CD turns into something you're really going to enjoy through your speakers? And we went into great depth as to how there's a code on the CD. And that code is then read by a laser, which is then put into meaning by a computer. Then the computer sends that through to an amplifier. The amplifier makes that much, much louder. Then that is sent through to a speaker with a magnet and a paper cone. And eventually a paper cone will wobble back and forth, wobbling the air until it goes into your ear and you hear what you recognize as music. But the truth is that's gone through various states. It's gone through extremely abstract conceptual states of holes inside a plastic disc. That's really weird. Like, what is holes inside a plastic disc got to do with me listening to an orchestra? The answer is you have to transduce it from one state, a code on a plastic disc, down to actual the sounds of an orchestra going all the way through to that you're hearing in your ears, etc. So we're talking about transduction. Now, the main code, as it were, the ones and the zeros of creation is in Olam HaBria. Olam HaBria is number two down, or number three up, depending upon how you're counting. And it is the world of creation. And what is in Olam HaBria? The Koichos, the primordial forces, which I've got here, orders, directives, and influences. This is the first place where God says, as it were, to Bob the Mallard, I want Bob the Mallard. I know, these are Bob the Mallard. Who's Bob the Mallard? Who's Jim at the bottom? The little duck at the bottom is Bob. It's Bob. Do you have a copy of the book?
Me?
Yeah, yes. You got everything you need. Yeah. Bob the Mallard is at the bottom, and Jim is at the bottom. We talked about why I had Bob the Mallard and Jim. Bob the Mallard is a creature who is affected upon. Jim is a creature who is affected upon, and also generates his own effects up in the system. This is the concept of deterministic flow all the way down, versus indeterministic flow, where Jim decides to chop down a tree against the creator's will. Now, when Bob the Mallard is told to migrate from a pond in Hendon to Africa, God does not reveal himself in prophetic greatness to Bob the Mallard on a pond in Hendon and go, Bob, go to Hendon. He doesn't do that. He just thinks, as it were, Bob the Mallow's got to go to, from Hendon to Africa. And that then filters down this whole system where it is encoded into a code in the Kaichas, in the primordial forces. And we said that it goes down a very long, convoluted system until it actually hits Bob the Mallard. We talked all about it. It is in the download. You have to trust me, Richard, it is in the download. And then the Malachim, which are merely servants or agents or messengers, have to literally, like, impulses on a wire or carriages on a railway, have to confer that concept to the endpoint, which is all the way down on the terrestrial world on planet Earth, or any planet, doesn't have to be Earth, any planet you may be on or that a creature is on that God wants to interface with. Does not have to be planet Earth. Okay? So his deterministic flow goes to the moon, the sun, all things in creation, and that's how he gets things done. Now, one thing I was just ending up talking about, I don't know if you remember, was the concept. Imagine you could take a TARDIS or some kind of device. Who was it that asked, could you get there? Someone asked, could you get there? Was it Daniel? Was it you? It was Dovi. Dovi asked, could you literally get in a spaceship and, you know, with enough buttons and get to Olam HaMalachim, Olam HaKoichos, Olam Yetzirah, Olam HaBriah, respectively? The answer is no, because they're in different dimensions. Rather than getting there, it you'd have to pull out of a level. The best way to get there is actually through a meditative trance. You'd literally have to get your mind to channel out of this kind of...
Is that possible?
Full physical thing like the mind is the power...
Abundance and Sulavada.
Right, but entering the Pardes is
the same thing.
Yes, it's not quite the same thing, but yes. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know. Moshe Rabbeinu went to Shemaim, and all the Malachim told Moshe Rabbeinu their own personal secret. Each one has a secret, and they all revealed their own unique secret to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Yetzer Hara, the Melech HaMaveh, the Satan, gave his secret, and his secret was that burning incense, certain kind of incense, a certain incense that's used as burnt in the tabernacle or in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, that checks a plague. If a plague is happening, that checks a plague, and indeed that was used later when a plague struck the people of Israel. Then, when that happened, the Yetzer Hara actually asked for incense to be burnt. Okay. So yes. It is possible to
Eicha
get...
and Rabbi Akiva.
Where they got to a different level of perception. No.
The Pardes.
The Pardes is not Olam HaMalachim. Look, let's just put that aside. The point is, yes it is, there's a level of possibility, yes it is, but you're not going to physically get there.
So was Moshe, when Moshe went up to heaven, was he physically in the desert?
That's a very good question. The answer is yes he was, and no he wasn't. Okay. I'm sorry to put, yes he was. Yes, he was. He had a physical body which was there, but he also had a corporeal entity that was also available in Shemaim as well. Okay, which is why, by the way, the Yetzer Hara, the Satan could show, that the Yetzer Hara could show an image of Moshe Rabbeinu's grave, his coffin, being taken up to Shemaim, because the Satan said that's true. Right. However, that was misinterpreted by the people of Israel as Moses dying, which is a very natural conclusion to make if you were to see such a thing. And the reason he did that was he wanted the Israelites to think Moses had died, so that they would now, there'd be elements of Israel that would now carve an idol to say, right, now that we've lost Moses, is it possible we could... Yeah? Okay, let me continue. So far, now let's talk about transduction. Transduction. What would you see if you went to the Koichos? What would you see if you could get into a machine and you could magically turn up at the Olam HaKoichos level? What actually would be there? I just want to give a quick example. We were looking at the letter Ches here. Okay, the letter Ches of the word Eitz Chaim L'Machasikim Bo, etc. That's on the Parochas for the people on the tape. Now, one of the things that the Medrash tells us is as follows. When Adam was created, one of the first things that God did was he paraded all the animals in front of him. And he asked Adam to name the animals. Now, many people think that that means that the animals didn't have any names. And the names that Adam gave, that was their name. That's not the case. God, for sure, had names for everything. As we'll learn, a name is a primal cause. A name is really the essence. It's the intrinsic code. A name is an intrinsic code. We'll get to that. The point was, God had definitely named all the animals. The thing was that Adam looked at the animals, saw which letter combinations, which code was appropriate for each animal, correctly named it, and God said, yes, that's right, that's brilliant. You are seeing things super clearly. So for sure, when he saw an ox, he saw the shin, the vav, the resh, he saw all the letters what their potentials are, understood which letter came first. It's interesting in genetics. Does anyone here study genetics? The minimal number, a codon, is three chemicals in the genetic code. That is the absolute minimum for any genetic code is three. And the first of those three is more important than the second, and the second is more important than the third. It's very much like that in Hebrew as well. Generally, the first letter, if you have short, etc., like there's a whole actual machlokes between Rashi and Ibn Sirik, etc., as to are there three-letter roots in Hebrew or one-letter roots? And Rashi holds there's one-letter roots, and others hold there are three-letter roots, which means you have to have at least three letters somehow working together. The point is the minimal number of letters they generally have is three for names of things, generally. That's a very interesting point genetically as well, because we always have a minimum number of three. But the first of that genetic code is always the most important. Often that same in Hebrew. When Adam looked at the animals, he saw, said, "Ah, the mainstay of the animals is Shin. The mainstay of the animals is Aleph. It's an Ari. It's an Ari. It's a lion. That is the main part of that. If it's an Akiv, it's an Akovish, etc. Then the iron, the Akuts, the base is the stinger bit. Any animal like that is always to do with hunting and ambushing, etc. If it's got the letter iron in, etc." He understood that. He understood the code. So he saw the letters which were making up everything and applied the letters in the correct order and correctly managed to deduce their names. What's really happening is here, he's basically seeing the Kochos manifest. He's seeing the code coming out into a physical thing. Let me explain. If you were... You know, we talked about the red and the green and the yellow, sorry, the red, amber, green traffic lights, and they flash in a certain order, and there's a guy in the DVLA, and he'd have to program in a particular thing to say, I want cars to stop and cars to go and things like that. If you were to open the little green cabinet on the side of the road, which holds all the gubbins, which is all the electronic components of a traffic light, what would you see? Would you see little lights flashing on and off? Like the red and the amber and the green, and a stick and cars? No. Not at all. What would you see?
Wires.
A bunch of wires. A circuit board, a bunch of wires.
Unless you were an engineer.
Ah, if you're an engineer, you'd understand what all those things are doing. But at the end of the day, you're going to be seeing... Now, if you're a computer programmer and you plug in, you have one of those things that all these servicemen walk around with. It's got like a jack. You plug in boop, 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 on your hands, and then the screen comes up and all this code starts. I had a BT engineer come to your house. Something like that. They have like a £2,000 tool, which basically is a screen which they plug into your jackbox. And they press a couple of buttons and all this data comes out, which is not available to you. But it's all being broadcast down the line, which you'll never know about. And they can tell all kinds of conditions of the wires and the cabling and the exchange and everything like that. And if you can read that, even though it's just like numbers, they mean a tremendous amount about the health and the quality of the line and the signal and where a fault could possibly be. Imagine you did take an elevator all the way up to the Kochos and you wanted to see what a table looked like. You may only see Shulchan, which is the word for table, right? Shulchan. You may only see, let's say, a letter Ches and a Shin interfacing with each other. Now, obviously, the Ches looks a bit like a table. It's manifested here as like a plane with legs and things like that, right? But what you're seeing is the pure code. In the Kabbalistic study of creation, which I said, the main thrust of Lurianic Kabbalistic study is how God actually made the universe from something conceptual into something concretized. Okay, we're not going to do that, but one of the main things that you see when you open those Sforim is interfaces of Hebrew letters. Letters linking with each other to form different things. So if you were to take an elevation up here, and you'd see like forests and stuff like that, what you would really see is basically code. Like you would be looking at a compact disc, and you'd read it, be ones and zeros, it's digital. It's just on, off, on, off, on, off. It doesn't mean anything to the uninitiated. But if you know what that means, if those groups mean and we're endpoints, you'd actually be able to start getting a handle on what's going on. Kabbalistically, we know that the Kochos are moving letters around, Hebrew letters. This is the concept that Hebrew letters were actually tools used in the creation of the universe. Yeah? Okay.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. I think it could be very not...
No, I need that. Oh, okay. Sorry, I don't have any spare of these, sorry.
I don't know, you might have dealt with this, but can we ask that? Why did Hashem make this world, the Olam HaKochos?
What was the purpose? Excellent. So the question is, why do it like this? Yeah. I think that's something we've already addressed, but I'm very happy to go over it again. Why make such a convoluted step-down filtration system? Sorry? The step-down filtration system is required because there's no other way God could interface with us unless he pulls himself away from us. Okay? Remember, there's the concept of the guy wanting to have a pork sandwich. Right? He wants a pork sandwich and, you know, he really is hungry. And God has said in the Torah, don't eat pork unless it's obviously it's a mitzvah, you're in a jungle, etc. like that. Don't eat pork. How could you possibly get to a situation where God's huge, incredible will is somehow no more important? HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pulled himself out of your consciousness via stages of more and more and more opacity. Until it's so dark, so occluded, so distant from you, that frankly, God's will and a pork sandwich are absolutely even Stevens. So he has to. He has no other way of doing it. He has to generate a system where he can distance himself away from the subject, all that the subject can have free will. Okay, while we're here, a little bit of revision. I think probably online to have a little bit of revision. All this, the whole system, everything you see here, absolutely everything. Oh, wow, good to see you. Okay. Do you have a copy of this? You can share it if you don't have. All this, everything that you've got, everything here, the entire system is there to generate free will. He steps out of you. There would be no free will, by the way. Would it be good for man to operate on any of these systems? Apart from the terrestrial? Would it be good for you? Oh, good evening. Would it be good for you to be in space? Where's space on this sheet?
In
Olam HaAsir Elyon, the upper world of action, which is the celestial. Would it be good for you to be in the space station?
Probably not.
I would say it would be much better for you to be on another planet rather than in a space station, or the best obviously would be on this planet. And the best on this planet would be?
Israel.
And the best in Israel would be?
Jerusalem.
You see how it's all focused into a point? It's, you know what it's like? You have a cup. I need another cup. No, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
is that empty?
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, I've got two cups.
You're going to love this. Have you ever heard of the concept that when Yaakov walked towards Israel, Israel walked towards him?
Yeah.
You heard that concept, right? This concept, good evening. The concept of Kvitzas Aderech. Kvitzas Aderech is like shortening of the way. That it's like you take one step and it's like you're walking on an elevator that's going down. You're walking down as well. You know what I'm saying? So you're walking down an elevator and the elevator is going down. So you go double the distance. It's like if you're in an airport and you have a moving runway. You know one of those moving walkways? And you walk on the moving walkway, you cover double the distance. Let me show you. What I'm going to do here now is I'm going to put two spheres next to each other. Can you see this? Two spheres next to each other. Now, where the two spheres kiss is the junction point between the two spheres. Can I ask you just to hold these? Could you just hold these like that? Because I'm going to need to do something. Okay, can you just hold it? Can you see these two spheres? You get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I'm in the middle of the two spheres, I'm at the junction point between the two spheres. Now, what happens if I start walking away from one of the spheres? If I start walking away from one of the spheres, then the other sphere above is walking away from me. Do you see what I'm saying? Look, let me show you what I'm saying. It's difficult because there are circles. Let me just give you two circles, all right? Forget what this diagram means. It's irrelevant now. It's to do with the human soul. Irrelevant. Let's take these two circles. At that point in the middle of the circle is the junction point between these two spheres. Let's call that Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where the sphere of up, where the next sphere kisses this lowest sphere. Now the truth is, anywhere away from that is not as good. If you take a drill and you drill a hole through a globe, and you take Jerusalem, and you take the tin, go, and the drill bit comes out, the nearest plot of land that's opposite Jerusalem is what?
Opposite, so like...
On the other side of the pole. What's the furthest plot of land you could go away from Jerusalem?
No, it's going to be New Zealand. I would say America. I would say Alaska.
Yeah, West Coast of America.
Where in the West Coast of America?
San Francisco.
California.
Hmm?
California.
It will be in California. What city?
Walt Disney World.
No.
What's the capital of California?
Los Angeles.
No. I went there.
San Diego.
Sacramento. Sacramento is the capital of California.
If you drill through, right through going down.
If it depends which angle you go, you sometimes come in the Pacific. You sometimes look. That's a moot point. The point is, get a globe and do it. What's amazing is that a human settlement has congregated on the point furthest away from Jerusalem, and that's made that the capital of California. And California is a unique place in America. What? It is the capital of Olam Hazeh. It is the capital of Olam Hazeh. It is the absolute seat of this world. Everything this world stands for is brought into being in California. And not Los Angeles, but Sacramento is the absolute spitz of that. And it is as far as you can get away from Jerusalem as you can on this planet. Why? Why is it like that? Why is it so hard to have spirituality in Sacramento, California? Because once you've walked away from the spheres, then the sphere itself has walked away from you. If you walk down this sphere that way, that sphere's pulling up away from you. Do you understand the difference? It's a natural thing in maths. If anything I'm telling you doesn't absolutely fit with the physical world completely, dump everything, not just that point. Everything has to be perfect. In a mathematical system, if you have two spheres, the second I take one footstep away from the top sphere, the top sphere is peeling away from me by one foot. When Yaakov Elu went closer to Jerusalem, it says the land rushed towards him. Why? Because when he moved one step, the heavenly Jerusalem is also moving one step towards you. Doesn't that make sense? Right? So Richard, thank you for the cup, right? Do you hear what I'm saying here? Do you hear where I'm coming from? The best place to be is on this earth, definitely, because the whole system is all focused on this laser beam of planet Earth. But if you're going to be in space, better to find another planet that you can live on. Don't hang around in space, because if you're hanging around in space, you're in a different firmament. You're in Olam HaSiyah Elyon. At least get to a terrestrial. Olam HaSiyah Tachtoin.
Does Jerusalem, kisses the next world up?
That's correct.
So
That's the joint point. In fact, within Temple Mount, there's a point. There's the Kodesh Kadoshim, the Evan Shasir, the actual mount. That stone is it. That is the absolute junction point, which is on the boundary. Well, it's actually just next to the boundary, because really the Mizbeach has the boundary between Benjamin's portion and Judah's portion. It's the edge of the Mizbeach. And it's in Judah's portion. It's in Benjamin's portion. Okay. So that's the absolute best place you could be. But God will have deterministic influence all the way through the system in order to generate free will. Okay, people, we're going to do some revision. Why do we need free will?
So we can earn our reward.
So that we can earn our reward justifiably. We will feel masters of that reward. If it was doled out to us, there'd be an element which we wouldn't feel comfortable with. What's the problem of not feeling comfortable with it? It's not perfect. Excellent. And if it's not perfect, what's the problem with that? God can't give it. That's right. And if God can't give it, he can't give it. See, he's got to be perfect. He's perfect, so he only can give perfection. He can't give anything else. So he's got... Why did God create the entire universe? To give of his goods to another, which is obviously for all of his good to perfection. Absolutely correct. God created the entire universe to give his good to another. But it has to be justifiable. Because if it isn't justifiable, it's not a perfect giving. So it has to be done for a system of free will. So he had to go ahead and create this entire system to blot himself out of your mind enough so that when you don't eat a pork sandwich, but you do it for the right intentions, you're fully justifiable to check that in for God consciousness as the reward. And there's no other way he could have done it. If there was, he'd have done that, because then that would have been perfect. He can only do one thing. He was willing to create the entire system for one man on one day, once, for 1 hour, to do one test once. That's it. And then the whole thing would be justified. It's us who changed that, right? Is this all absolutely solid? Is this absolutely solid with everyone? Is it making sense? Richard in the back, middle now. Mitch had kind of elevated a bit. Yeah, you come to, I know that there's a lot of data here which I haven't, but it is at least making, it doesn't sound like absolute gobbledygook. How's it sounding, ladies? All good? You okay with the concept of the spheres? Moving close, moving everyone?
What is the name of the city, American
Sacramento, capital of California. Okay. I tried giving a shear there. Should I tell you my story? I was giving a shear. It's unbelievable. I'll tell you the end. I gave a shear in a coffee bean. There's a coffee bean there. Gave a shear in a coffee bean. I'll tell you at the end. Unbelievable story. What happened there? I was giving a shear in a coffee bean. Okay. Well, you will speak. Is everyone comfortable with all the materials so far? Yeah. Is everyone comfortable with the temperature? Air conditioning, you're happy? We got to, so everyone understands the, oh, so if you were to go upstairs into the koichas and look at a table, you'll probably see something like a letter ches. It's a code. The code hasn't been manifest yet into an actual table. You just see an abstract code of a letter that manifests this concept. So the koichas is the code. The melochim make that happen. And then we live in the world. And that whole system is a step-down filtration, distancing you from the divine and spirituality. You have to be distanced from spirituality to keep the barest amount available for free will. And you have to have just enough spirituality so the physical world is not occluded by it. And vice versa. Does that make sense? Basically, if you had too much spirituality, there'd be no free will. If there's not too much physicality, there would also be no free will.
You might have to cop me. Was Adam in the same place that we are?
No, he was 50-50. We discussed that. He's absolutely pure. He was completely 100% totally balanced. We are misbalanced due to his. We talked about the entry, the black and the white plasticine balls. Right. Smush them together, you get a grey plasticine ball.
So when did God create the rest of the world?
Mm-hmm.
So when did God create the rest of the world?
The rest
was Adam in the Olam HaAsiyah?
Adam was the last thing to be created on Erev Shabbos.
Was he in? What was? Did he exist
Olam HaAsiyah? He had to. The test can only be real here.
Right.
There's no test anywhere else. The Menachem can't be tested.
He was closer to.
He was where you. You don't understand. Let me explain something. I mean, you're a pinball machine. A pinball machine. I don't know why I just thought of that. A pinball machine. You know, ding 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 flippers. Tilt. I'm sorry. I can't believe I'm doing this. You're a pinball machine, and the ball is knocking around the bumpers. Dun 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 dun. Oh, sorry, I can't believe him. Dun 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 ding ding ding. All that, and you're asking, is the ball on the table? Well, the whole thing—the stand, the lights, the bumpers, the electricity, the money that goes in the slots—is only there for the ball. The flipper, he's the absolute thing. He's it. All of creation is centered. The only two things that matter is God and Adam. Everything else is stuff on the side. God wants to give him his good to another. That other thing happened to be Adam. That other thing happened to be man. Everything else, peanut butter, cream cheese, giant squids, comets, lemonade. The black holes are secondary to him. The only things that matter is the relationship. Look, you get married, you have a relationship with someone. The only thing that matters is the relationship, really. That's how it should be. The only thing that matters is the relationship. Everything else is on the side. It's the relationship that God wants. Everything else is a framework. The table, the flippers, the buttons on the side of the pinball. It's only there for the ball. You're playing a game. Do you understand? Of course he had to be here. He was all it was about. Does that make sense? Is everyone comfortable with all that? It's a pinball analogy. My first ever pinball analogy. How'd it go? 50-50? Page 79. Here we go, plugging all that. Now, why we go through all this in the beginning part of the shit is so when we read it inside, it's not alien. Did we get to point three? I left my book at home, so I don't have my note. Did we get to point three?
Four.
We got to point four. Does everyone say we got... The existence is...
Three.
I'm going to go back to three, because look, quite a few people are calling three. So, look, it's a bit of chazori, yeah? The existence and state of being of the physical universe, which is where, you should now know this, to terrestrial, Olam HaAsiyah Tachtein, the bottom of the four worlds, thus emanate from these highest forces, which is where? Olam HaBriya, the world of creation, and are dependent upon them. What was that? Whatever exists in the physical world, anything, is only, I would add in, a result of something that takes place among these forces. Trees, plants, you name it, animals. This is true of both what existed in the beginning and what transpires with the passage of time. What about a dog that has been born since creation? Well, it wasn't their primordial stage, but it's the dog that has been born to the first ever dog. Well, the answer is that's also part and parcel of the forces. Okay. These forces were the first things that were created. What a secret that's just been revealed there. The first thing that God made in Bereshit, the ordering of everything, was the primordial forces. That's the first thing he made. And they were arranged in various systems and placed in different domains. Everything that came about later was as a result of this, following rules willed by God, linking these forces to the physical world. Everything that happens in the past or present thus has its origin in the process taking place between these forces. The existence, state, pattern, and every other quality that exists among these forces are the result of what is relevant to them by virtue of their essential nature. It's pretty tough English. Basically, they've got everything they need in order to work. The existence, state, arrangement, and other phenomena involving physical things in turn depends on what is transmitted and reflected to them by these forces, which means almost everything is an outcome of the forces. What isn't an outcome of the forces?
Our free labour.
That's it.
Our impulse.
Our choices, the outcome of our choices. Everything else and how we use it, the axe that chops down the tree, the fact that metal can chop down a tree because wood is not as tough as steel, is encoded in the forces. Your choice to use the axe is down to you. The existence, state, range, rather physical phenomena, physical things, right. Following the essential nature of these physical entities, that's the end of point three. Is everyone comfortable about point three? Kobe, are you comfortable? You are. Richard, you comfortable? Everyone else? Four. Okay, here we go. According to this principle, every single physical phenomena, rain, gravity, electromagnetic forces, originates among these highest forces. We still don't know what gravity is. No one can tell you what it is. Is it a force? Is it a wave? Is it space? Is it time? Is it all those things? There is, however, one exception to this rule. Uh-oh. And that includes all things dependent upon man's free will. That is not encoded in the forces. God willed that man should be able to choose freely between good and evil. Define for me good and evil. What's good and evil, people? You are Jewish philosophers now.
Distance from God. Closeness.
Excellent. Distance from God and closeness to God. Give me an example. Fine. So eating a pork sandwich generally is?
Distance.
It's distance because God doesn't want you to do it. That is called bad. Not eating a pork sandwich when you have a terrible tiver to do so, have a desire to do so, and there's no good mitzvah justification for you to do it, is called good because you've overcome your basal urges and done what a supernal force has told you to do. Is this making sense? Is this making any sense? Some. Making sense? You cool with it? And therefore made man absolutely independent in this respect. Now, when he made man absolutely independent, that's not us now. This is Adam on the drawing board. We'll get to that. Okay? Man was thus given the power to influence the world and its creatures in any manner his free will desires. You want to go and chop down the rainforests? You want to go do this and that? But vakasha! The world is literally, you are the dominant life form on this planet. The world, therefore, contains two opposite general influences. The first is that, here we go, of natural determinism. That's where this flowed down the system. Bob the Mallard. Natural deterministic flow. The second is indeterministic. That is bottom up as opposed to top down. Top down is determinism. God wants it, it happens. Bob the Mallard flies from Hendon to Africa. Indeterministic is, Jim goes out and chops down a cherry tree, which is forbidden. The deterministic influence is directed downward from on high, while the indeterministic is directed upward from below, that's bottom up. Do the angels habitually sin? No, they don't. Generally not, although there are exceptions. Do the forces, the primordial forces, err?
No.
No. No. Does God make mistakes?
No.
No. In fact, the only room for error anywhere in the system is Jim. That little guy at the bottom.
So Bob never makes a mistake.
Ducks don't make errors. They don't wake up in the morning and go, meow. Oh my gosh, I'm running the cat program. Now, how did that happen? All right, all right, all right. Who changed my disc? Come on, guys. Put the cat... Phil, he's always doing that. It's Phil the prankster who reprogrammed Bob the Map. No, that never happens. Ducks are always ducks.
But they can have actions which are as a result of our indeterministic ones. So something up to kick the door.
100%. Absolutely. But ducks don't err. The only thing that puts error into the system is us. So all error must be indeterministic. But all good is deterministic and indeterministic. The good we do and the bad we do. So the system must be robust enough, elastic enough, to deal with pumping error in the system from the bottom. Is everyone clear on that? Erica, are you clear on that?
Yeah.
A little bit of a doubt somewhere?
No.
Good? Yeah.
So does that mean, so even when we send something bad up,
the system,
what comes back down is good. Even if it may not be perceived as good, it's good.
That's an excellent, that's a brilliant deduction. It is the processing of our good.
It's the processing of our good.
Example.
Physical example.
Here's an example. You're not going to like this example. Brace yourself for a bit of an example, okay? I just drank this lovely glass of cordial here, right? Refreshments are served as part of this course. Every glass of water you drink in a civilized country has been through 7 people before it got to you. How does that work? Not in a nice way, is the bottom line. Sewage is recycled back into useful water. If you were to pump sewage into a system, that system has to be robust enough to process the sewage, otherwise you'll sully the system and the system will break. An extremely clean place, like a place you'd make a satellite, where you have to get brushed with air showers or where you make microchips, there's no dust anywhere, is extremely sensitive to pollution. If you have a sewage waterworks, you're going to have to be able to put sewage in one end and get beautiful clean drinking water out the other. This system is able to deal with spiritual sewage, process it, and then send it back down. Okay? It has to be able to deal with that, otherwise the whole system would break and the entire universe would collapse. Okay? Leon, you got a question?
So the negative energy as such is going up, it's getting filtered, and then the positive energy coming back.
It's not transmuted directly to positive.
Okay. There must be consequences for all the bad things that happen.
Yes.
It goes up.
Yes.
It'll hit us.
Yes. What was the first piece of spiritual sewage that was created?
Substance abuse.
Substance abuse, where man took a drug thinking he was going to have a trip. He was sold the drug by a drug dealer, and it was a lie. And he abused a substance to do something you ate, right? Of all the things God gave us a mitzvah of kashrus, said you can eat absolutely everything, don't eat that. Then he erred, and he shattered the system. But the system was robust enough not to break entirely and make a subsystem which has within it the ability to repatriate the main system.
That comes...
comes at a price. You're not meant to muck it up. But if you do, there's ways around it.
But that's my point. What came back to Adam as a result of his negative input...
Overall was good, but it wasn't the best. It wasn't the best.
Wait, if it comes from it was
it wasn't the best it could be. It was the best it could be in this lower state. You understand? Look, if a guy declares bankruptcy, he can knock off all of his debts. But it's not the best situation. You could say, well, that's the best situation he could be in now. Yes, that's true. Okay, but overall, that's not the best situation. Yeah. Look, you'll have to work with that, okay? Well, I can discuss that with you at the end, but it has to be robust enough. Where do we get to? The deterministic influence directed downward, is that where we got to?
Yeah.
End of that point. The indeterministic influence on the other hand is the result of man's free will here in the physical world. Since both man and his actions are physical, the only direct influence that he can have is on physical things, trees, his lawn, tables. Because of the linkage, though. Linkage. What is the linkage between the physical and the high, and the upper world? Because of the linkage between the physical world and the highest forces, which is shown on this sheet through the angels, is to the highest forces, every time a physical thing is influenced, he chopped down a tree, that must have an effect on the counterpart of these forces. It must do. Otherwise the system can't work. The system can't say that tree where the bird lives, and man chopped down the tree where the bird lives. Now the bird doesn't live in that tree. You can't keep encoding for that. Since man's deeds in the world below are what influence these forces on high, man's influence is said to be directed upward, as it were. There's no up and down here. It's outside of physical dimension. It is thus the exact opposite of a natural deterministic influence, which is down. So you've got to understand it. It's a really, really important thing. God said, okay, I want a little tweety birdie, nice tweety birdie, living in a nest in a cherry tree in Jim's garden. So there's a beautiful family, they're living in a nest in a cherry tree in Jim's garden. Jim's wife, Mama, she's got to give me a coffee table. Everyone's got a coffee table. All the Joneses have got a coffee table. We need a coffee table. Cherry wood's a great wood to make coffee tables from. Yeah, but I can't. God told me not to chop down cherry trees because he doesn't love a tree. Yeah, but in the end, he succumbs. He chops down the cherry tree. What about the bird in the ecosystem that's based on that tree? There were insects and birds and reptiles that lived in that tree. The forces had to encode all that. There was newts and lizards and bats that lived in the tree. They only came out at night, and there was a bird that lived there, and little birds were designed to grow up there, and Jim came along and heaven said you've got to have a cherry tree there. That means something must change upstairs. There's no cherry tree there. There's just a stump. He's taken the cherry tree, and it is now a nice piece of Art Deco furniture in Jim's house. What happens to the koichos? They have to change. They have to bend. They have to regrow. And say there is no cherry tree there. The birds, everything has to be moved to something else. That bird will have to be reorganized where it's going to live. It's going to survive at all. It'll have to live in another tree. Aye, but there were other birds that were meant to live in that tree and they have a different species. There's competition between those species that could lead to all kinds of... Yes, that's right. Man can muck up the environment too. It works like that. Is that at least clear what I'm saying?
Right.
Yes.
You said that the forces can bow from heaven, and the only thing that can go back up is man's errors go back up. What about if man does a good thing, and say man plants a tree? Is that not coming down as well?
The concept that a tree can grow and that seed gives forth sapling is an expression of that which comes down. The fact that there's a tree in that plot is an indeterministic which is going up. Let's say it's even not a bad thing. For instance, when you eat a chocolate bar, you know the famous adage, you know, one bar of Cadbury's Dairy Milk has as much calorific content as one bar of standard destruction-grade dynamite used in mining. You laugh about that. The only difference is how it releases its energy. One is slowly over time, and one is in an instant. You could technically tap into the energy in a dairy milk. It has the same energy as a stick of dynamite. But the dynamite gives it out all in one go! And the dairy milk gives it out over the course of a day when you digest it. That's a product of the koichos. Because the koichos said when atoms and molecules are linked like that, they combust. And atoms and molecules are linked like that, they don't. Who's to say oil burns and water doesn't? You could figure it out saying, well, there's nothing to combust, there's no carbons, etc. Yeah, but where does that come from? Who's to say one metal conducts and another doesn't? We're still not sure exactly how that works. A sea of electrons around copper. How does that work in that and not in aluminium? We're not sure what binds them to the atoms. We don't know how it works. That's a deterministic flow. You plant a tree, who says the tree's going to grow? That's an expression of the encoding in the genetic material of that seed. The fact that you put it there, which was a mitzvah, let's say, bavakasha, that's great. Now that it's there, that goes back up and says, no, there's a tree here. But everything manifests in that tree and the photosynthesis going on in that tree is all an expression of that which is in the primordial forces. We work within it, mostly. Yeah, make sense? Comfortable with that?
One point.
Ronnie.
The doing mitzvah and studying Torah sends forces all the time up. and yes. the balance of the world.
Well, I'm not saying... Let's not talk about keeping the balance of the world. That's true. Doing mitzvahs, or doing averus, doing good things or doing bad things, always pumps stuff up into the system. The system is designed to receive both. It must be, otherwise it'll break.
So it's the same.
Because look, you could argue doing mitzvahs is a bad thing. Because if it's such a perfectly balanced system, if I start doing all this good, it'll tip the whole thing to too much good and the whole system will break. If I do bad things, then it's too much bad and the whole system will break. It must be robust enough to accept either input. That's the point so far that we're talking about. Is that clear, at least, in and of itself?
So if it will be very good, then somewhere it will be very bad. It will create a hole where bad thing will come anyway.
And that's
to make a balance.
Now, that's a very tricky question, what you're asking. And that's really a Section 2 question. The balance as to what happens with our good deeds is a very tricky question what you're asking. Can I leave that until we get to the second section where we talk about the actual output of man's deeds, how that's judged and the recompense of that? Yeah? Is that all right? It's a very good question, but for me to answer it now would take 10, 15 minutes, and I've got more to go through. Is that okay? Is that okay? Yep, still friends? Okay. It's necessary to know, however, that even man's deeds are not all the result of his free will. I love this. Loretta, can I ask you a question? Do you mind if I ask you a question? If I were to offer you a cup of tea or coffee, what would you say? What would you like? A cup of tea. If I was offered a cup of tea or coffee, I would go for a cup of tea. Now, why would Loretta and I both want tea over coffee?
Your historic experiences.
Right. I like tea generally over time. I've got more pleasure out of tea than I have out of coffee out of two. I enjoy tea more. So if you're going to turn around and go, here's two pleasures. The pleasure of a beautiful cappuccino or the pleasure of a nicely brewed cup of tea. I enjoy the pleasure of tea more than I do coffee. So I'm just going after my pleasure. That's not a free will decision. What must be, come on guys, experts now, what is always the core of a free will decision? What must there be involved in a true free will decision? A mitzvah! You can't have a true free will decision without a mitzvah. Why is that? Why is what Daniel is saying true?
Because maybe it's not for your personal pleasure.
There could be personal pleasures involved in mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are very pleasurable.
It's not God's will whether you choose a coffee or a tea.
Right! God doesn't care very much whether you have a coffee or tea, as long as it's not non-kosher, and as long as you make a brocha on it, it's all for it. I'm going to make a shekel on it, whatever happens. I'm doing the right thing anyway. Whether you have coffee or tea, it's going to go, oh my gosh, he chose coffee. That's not good. Look, what shoes you put on today is not a free will decision, but on Yom Kippur it would be. Because on Yom Kippur we don't wear leather shoes. Now, so putting on a pair of leather shoes on Yom Kippur becomes a godly decision. God said, you've got to afflict yourselves. It's in the Torah, you've got to afflict yourselves. One way we have is uncomfortable footwear. But on Tuesday, in Mar Cheshvan, whether you put on trainers, or whether you put on a leather pair, whatever it is, it's not a God got involved in it. Because God didn't get involved in it. It's as if I'm being pulled, my neshama. My spiritual entity is going, God wants you to wear the Nikes. And my physicality is going, no, I must wear the Adidas. And it's like, it doesn't matter either way. Free will decision is only a tussle between the spiritual elements in your reality and the physical elements in your reality. Do you hear the point so far? So just a choice as to whether or not I have tea or coffee, Loretta's choice to say, I want a cup of tea. That wasn't a massive bechira. The whole world was created for this point that she could make that decision. Because it isn't that great in its axis, because there's no spirituality, physicality, tussle, strife. Our free will is the outcome of internal strife. One more time. Our free will is the outcome of internal strife. If you have no internal strife, it's very likely to not be free will. Now, the vast majority of our choices that we make is not a bechira choice. Why did you wear that shirt as opposed to another shirt? That's not God. Oh, I thought, God would want. It doesn't work like that. I wore that shirt because I like the colour orange, and I decided to go for colour orange today, and I'm in that orange mood. Oh, God, if I would, what does... You know what I mean? It's sort of mitzvah. When a mitzvah comes along, are you going to eat that pork on granary? Or are you not going to eat it? And Hoffy's like, oh, but I am so hungry. And that looks so good. And no one's looking. And the Neshama's going, you know what? But this will cause you spiritual and technically physical damage. This is not good for you as to who you are. You're on a prescription. You're a Jew, and you're on prescriptive diagnosis. You've been diagnosed as a Jew. And therefore, because of that, you're on a prescription for life. It's called keeping kosher. Like you're going to some beds, kneel by mouth or liquids only. We're kosher only. We've got a thing about our beds. Kosher only. That's a prescription. So now it becomes a tussle between the doctor and the patient. The patient wants to eat solids, and the doctor says kneel by mouth. Do you hear the point? But the vast majority of our choices are not free will decisions. Whether you buy an iPhone or a Samsung, it's not a free will decision. Yeah.
If you get so used to doing a mitzvah correctly, is that still free
will? What a fantastic question coming in from the northern side of the room. That's right. If I get very used to doing a mitzvah, is that still a free will decision? Now, the truth is, not quite as much, no. No, it isn't. Let's say you or someone you know has made a decision to stop eating pork. They made it 20 years ago. Now they go into M&S and they're in the same place again that they were in 20 years ago. 20 years ago, they had a massive tussle. Should I eat the pork on granary? It's not that low-fat mayonnaise. The same mayonnaise. They've been making that mayonnaise for 20 years. It's that good. You know what? You haven't eaten pork in 20 years. When you go past that, are you going to be in the same? No way. Are you as rewardable for not eating that pork sandwich? No, because I would never eat the pork sandwich. I'm at an operating level far beyond pork sandwich or not pork sandwich. Your Bechira is minuscule. You're always playing for the millimetres with Bechira. How many of you here could honestly say that you have a free will decision to take a gun, walk down the street, and rob the next old lady you see for a handbag? For some people, that's a free will decision. But those people are operating on a very low level of free will. For you, let's assume I'm adjusting that everyone's here is... I'm not sure, I don't know, maybe, most people. Most people, everyone that's walking down, they're not free will, that's not, I'm the next old lady, can I help you over the road with your bags? I'm not going to say, can I beat you over the head and steal your money in order for me to buy, you know, drugs or something? I'm not on that level, that's not my choice. So yes, you think after 120, Mordechai comes up, and there's an old lady walking down, I want my reward in Olam Haba. On what grounds? There was an old lady that walked down in front of me and I didn't beat her over the head and steal her handbag. But we know that you didn't have a choice. You would never have done it anyway. Think I can ask for a reward about that? Well done for not beating her over the head and killing her? No. Had I been pulled, had 50% of my being saying, kill her, take her money, buy drugs. And I said, no, I can't. Hashem wouldn't like me to do that. That would be really bad. Oh, but I really want the money in her handbag. Then it would be free, then it'd be rewardable for not doing it. So the higher the level you go, if you've decided to put on tefillin every day, that's not Yom Tov and Shabbos, right? Obviously it's a mitzvah when you do put them on because you've been told to put them on. But it's not a free will choice if you've been putting on them every day for 20 years, right? You're just going to do it, it's like part of the routine. It's not a free will choice anymore. You're rewardable for it. But it's not the same as are you at the level whether or not you're going to do it at all. Do you hear the point?
Same for a thief, same for...
Now, what happens if that thief does tshuva and 20 years later he's now a rabbi in a community?
Same thing.
He's not going to have that issue. That can happen. People, I'm telling you, you know... Now, that's a very good point. A guy who's a thief and he goes around stealing every single day, does every before, to a certain extent, no, because he's not making a choice. It's his regular behaviour. His free will be now. How violent will he be in the crime? Let's take a guy who smokes on Shabbos. This may be practical for some people in the room. I don't mean it to be specifically practical for anyone in the room. People who smoke on Shabbos. The Torah specifically forbids you from creating a flame on the Sabbath. In fact, it's the most archetypal way of breaking Shabbos you could do. Because the first thing that God did when he created the entire universe was he kindled a flame. Vayhi or. He made light. It's the most creative thing that we can do. This is the first creative thing that happened. Let's say a guy smokes 20 cigarettes on Shabbos. He's an addict. There's nothing he can do. It's not a free will decision. He has to have that nicotine. He needs it. This has been ingrained in his being. He wakes up on Shabbos one day and he says, you know what? Today, I'm going to have 19 cigarettes. I'm going to have 19 cigarettes on Saturday. But that one cigarette that he's not having is lekavod Shabbos Kodesh. It's for the honor of the Sabbath. He's about to shuv at tzaddik. That man's considered a tzaddik. Why? Even though he's going to break Shabbos over 19 times scripturally, he's doing his very best at that moment. There's nothing we can ask of him. He's trying to do his best at that moment.
I just have to go,
so. No problem. He's doing his best at that moment. Which means that that 19th cigarette is his Bechira point. He can't work on the 18th. He can't work on the 18th because he's an addict. You can't have a go at him on the 17th. What God expects of him is that next week, 18 and a half. 18 and a half. Whatever he can do based upon his particular level of addiction. 17 and a half. 17. 16. Until eventually, he lights the cigarette out of a Havdalah candle. But he didn't smoke. Eventually, that may take years. God's very patient. But that's where his Bechira is. Do you understand the point? For negativity and for positivity. But the vast majority of our choices is not an outcome of true free will. It's just the way that we've been learned behaviours.
But it's deterministic. So
sometimes
tea was deterministic. Hashem wants it.
Well, no, because originally I had to have a cup of tea which I got pleasure from, which I have now started to gain. Whether I get pleasure from tea or coffee is down to me.
But Hashem wants you.
Originally I had to make a choice.
Okay.
But it wasn't a free will choice, but it was a choice. I get more pleasure from tea. It wasn't a free will choice because of the mitzvah. Okay, let's continue. No, it's the only thing that can give you free will.
But you understand, or we understand,
I have to call it. I'm sorry. I really do have to call it, because I have to continue. I'm really... The answer is there is no free will without a mitzvah. There is nothing without a free will and a right. All things which are free will, only because either in line with God's directives, or out of line with God's directives. There is nothing else. That's all you have to be good and bad. You wouldn't be able to define good and bad without a mitzvah.
I understand the good and bad point.
Let's just continue, okay? Oh, so what did we need to know that a man's deeds are not the result of his free will. Tea and coffee is not the result of your free will. While this is true of most of his actions, there are some that result from divine decree to reward or punish him, as will be discussed in detail in section 2. Now that's something that happens that's got nothing to do with you. God puts you in a situation because he wants you to be in a particular predicament. Who you were born to, which country you were born to, what portion in time you've been incarnated in. That is nothing to do with you. Such decrees take place in the same manner, deterministically, as any other natural phenomena. The fact that you were born to a woman in a particular time and place is all the natural deterministic flow, where the influence is directed downwards from the high forces. That's all normal. Nevertheless, even in such cases, very important point, the elements resulting from the individual's own free will, whether or not I smoked that cigarette on Shabbos, are still directed upwards in the manner discussed earlier. When I make a choice as to whether or not I'm going to smoke on Shabbos, that goes back up into the system. When I make a free will choice, that goes up into the system and affects the koichos. When I'm affected by the koichos, it's top down. Top down is deterministic, bottom up is indeterministic. Is that clear? That's the end of point four. Is everyone clear on point four? Anthony?
We can't go any higher than Kochas. It can't go to the world of...
Nihilist. What do you mean we can't go any higher?
Keep on referring to Olimar Bria
as
where it goes up. So none of our actions can go
No, that's where the concept of code ends.
Right, okay.
There's no code anywhere above that.
Okay.
You know what's up when you with a guy in the DVLA who's put it on a computer chip? Above that is what's in his brain as to what he's thinking when the car should stop. It's beyond the realm of code. You can't encodify that. It's his job to put it down into a computer code that someone can read.
Right, so it starts
it's
there,
just,
comes down.
It's so abstract at that point, there is no form.
It's not affected by anything going on.
Right.
It stops there.
God can make choices too.
Yeah, but it's not affected by anything that we're sending up.
God can make choices based upon what we're doing. But it's not in a form. It's in a form of God's thought, as it were. It's mystical.
I don't understand that.
No, it's... God
can only act in perfect ways.
Yes. God doesn't make a choice between good and bad. He makes a choice as to the very best way that man will be able to see it at that particular point in time.
But it's not free will. I'm sorry, to me that's not...
I understand. It's a Section 2 thing. I understand. It is a Section 2. We will discuss it. Point 5. I can continue? Is everyone happy with it to carry on? Apart from Adrian. Point 5. Look at the shoulder note. Man's deeds influence the world. It's an incredibly important point in Jewish philosophy. God arranged things so that every single matter falling within the realm of man's free will should be able to affect the transcendental forces, these are the kochos in Olam HaBria, through this indeterministic influence, that's upward, directed, bottom-up flow of influence, according to the measure and degree set by God. Certain things have certain powers, other things have lesser powers. This is true not only of man's deeds, but even of his speech and thought. This is for Jew and Gentile. All humans, their thoughts count, because the thought behind a particular act gives that act potency. If an individual did something by accident, it has a different effect if the individual did something on purpose. This is true, not only of man's deeds, but even his speech and his thoughts. The amount and degree of this influence, however, cannot exceed the limits decreed and circumcised by God's wisdom. What it means is, he can't break the system. Whatever goes up into the system has a certain potency, a certain energy, a certain voltage, a certain current level, which is decreed by God within the system. Chopping down a rainforest does a certain thing. Chopping down a human being does another certain thing. Building an establishment of education does one thing. Saving another person's life does another. The energies which flow up and down are all set wattages. God set it all out. Every mitzvah has its energy that it can put in or out. What you do is merely plugging into or pressing the button on the system which causes a light to turn on and energies to go to a predetermined energy. Keeping Shabbos does a certain thing. Shooing away the mother bird before you take its chicks or eggs does another. Slaughtering an animal in accordance with ritual slaughter does one thing. Worshipping idols does another. To a predetermined decree. This is why sometimes God says an individual does this, gets this. An individual does that, gets that. You honor your mother and father, you get arichas yomim. Get length of days. If you drink the blood that is pouring out of the wound of an animal which has been slaughtered ritually, and you lap the blood which has been pumped out by the heart, then your soul is cut off. Now that actually makes perfect sense, mystically, which we'll talk about, because basically the human is imbuing the animistic soul, and the human soul can't bear to be next to an animal soul, because the cow soul is now being put into the body. The Torah alludes at this when it says the soul is in its blood. That when it talks about there's a difference between wild animals and domesticated animals. Domesticated animals made a choice to be more physical. They put their physicality in the hands of man. So the soul is in the blood, as opposed to the blood being in the soul. It's a beautiful concept. The point is that a human soul and an animal soul, when they're mixed together, causes the human soul to rescind in disgust. That's called being spiritually cut off. Because it's a part of it's a system. You're in a system. It's a system. You press a button, something happens. It's a system. It's in like an electrical circuit. You put the black wire in the brown wire and the green wire, that's what happens. It's a circuit. And voltages and current happens. The manual as to where to put the wires is the tire. The wiring diagram is the tire. Is this making any sense? Please tell me it's making some sense. little bit of sense. You're a little, yeah. I know it's late. You guys, you're doing great. Point six, look at us chugging through this. Now, oh, this is vital. People, this is vital, this point. Every indeterministic influence. What's an indeterministic influence? Erica, what is an indeterministic influence? Excellent! What's it? Kobe, what is a deterministic influence? Top down. Every indeterministic influence, something I do, whether I eat pork or not, also results, as Daniel pointed out, in a deterministic influence. Energy up in the system always results in energy down the system. When the highest forces, the kaichas, see how important they are, we're not even talking about the angels in the middle, are influenced by man's free will, the angels just carry the data back and forth. They in turn influence the physical things that are inherently linked to them. Trees, dogs, peanut butter. All these processes, however, listen to this, follow detailed laws as decreed by, it's not random, as decreed by the highest wisdom as being best for creation. Both the ways through which man's influence reaches the highest forces and the manner in which these forces react towards the physical world all depend on many, many factors. But all this constitutes the deep mystery of how God's providence, Hashgacha, first time he said that word in the whole Sefer, we'll have a whole section on it, works and brings about everything that was and will be. Talk about enigmatic. Talk about enigmatic. What did he just say? Everything in the universe that ever was or will be is set aside by the primordial forces, which will always have an equal and opposite reaction to all the forces that you put in it. What are you talking about? This is electricity, people. You can't put energy in a circuit one way and not expect something to come out the other way. That's nature. We're part of the circuit. This isn't random. It needs us. We're the switch. In school, did you ever make a really primitive switch of a battery with two wires, a light bulb, a 9-volt battery, right? And a wire, and a wire, and then a little switch. And you suddenly went, and the light went, oh, it's like magic. The light was going on and off. And the teacher would go, that's because the energy is being stopped at the switch. When you make a connection, the energy flows around to the light bulb and you can see it. But like, wow! What's the most important component? The switch is the point of choice as to whether or not you want the light bulb to go on. We switches. But we're autonomous. God's not got us on a, like a, you know, like, sorry, Lahavdil, like a bad guy in a movie. Have this panel with 20,000 switches, and he's like, he isn't doing that. He leaves it to the switch to choose whether or not to turn on or off itself. He leaves it to you. I'm telling you, turn this on a Saturday and turn that off on a Saturday. Whatever you want to do. He's got to do that, because otherwise the switch becomes nothing more than anything else in the circuit. He only built it for the switch. He only built it for us. So he has to give it over to us. He has to do it like that. Otherwise, the switch has no real ability to say, I did it. But all it's working within is a system that someone else set up. The fact that it makes a switch and things happen on a Saturday. Who made the idea of Saturday? Who made the idea of light? Who made the idea of gravity? Who made the idea of myrtle and palm fronds and hadassim? Hadassim and myrtles and arovas, willows, and astragium, citrons, and said if you wave on a certain day something, who made that up? All he's asking us to do is do it. Whether you want to do it or you don't want to do it, down to you. I'll set the whole network up. The outcome of whether you do it or don't do it, I'll organise. If you don't do it, that'll lead to certain negative effects. If you do, that'll lead to certain positive effects. What those positive effects are, how much they're, how positive, how negative they are, I'll judge all that. I'll do it all. You go out for a beautiful meal. A beautiful meal. What? Kobe, what's your favourite meal?
Pizza.
Pizza. Let's say you get deep pan or thin crust.
Deep.
pan. You go out for your favourite deep pan meal with your best toppings. Your choice was, I want the deep pan with the extra parmesan and mushrooms, maybe, sweet corn, tuna, whatever it is you like. That's your choice. When you eat that, the effect of those flavours on your tongue, which tell your brain, that is some mighty fine pizza. Who made that up? You certainly didn't. Nothing to do with you. You're just experiencing the pleasure that deep pan pizza gives you. You particularly like that particular pleasure. If you were to contrast that with eating a piece of steak, or halibut, or chicken, or tuna, all the chemical reactions that are happening in your taste buds, which are then being converted to electricity, they're going out to your brain going, he must be eating tuna. That tastes a lot like what I consider to be tuna. It's nothing to do with you. The taste of tuna's been encoded. The taste of pizza's been encoded. The taste of steak's been encoded. Everything's encoded. All you're doing is making the final choice as to what pleasure to be involved in. Doesn't that make sense? You aren't doing anything else. In fact, once you swallow that pizza, what happens to it? It sits there, it gets digested. The way that your stomach has a lining of oblique muscle. It's got three linings of muscle, so that means it can churn. Have you ever regulated that? Who said, you know what? Enough churning. Alright, stop already. Have you ever done that? Can you do that? If you put no, then it goes through your whole digestive system and all the proteins and fats and carbohydrates and sugars are taken out, chopped up into little bits, put in different parts of your body. Your liver does some things, your kidneys do another, your spleen does another, your lymph does another, the bowel does another, the blood does another. And all of that is going on with none of your input whatsoever. The only input you had was, I could murder a pizza. That was your input. The pleasure you got from it, everything else, nothing to do with you. Nothing to do with you at all. Everything else has been encoded for you. The only thing you've got is, am I going to do it or not? How that manifests, whether you decide not to do it or to do it, is really nothing to do with you. It's just something you experience. It doesn't sound true or does it sound false? It has to sound absolute, Emmis, because if it isn't, we just have to dump the whole lot. So anyone here doesn't feel as if it's absolute, complete truth? Complete truth? Sounds good? God had to choose to make a world. Think about that. Okay, let's get to point 7. He had to. It wasn't an ability if he had to or not. He chose to do it. It was his rut song. Keep thinking. Point 7. I know you don't like it. Point 7. As discussed earlier, God's wisdom decreed that both good... we are at point 7, right? Yeah. God's wisdom decreed that both good and evil exist in the world. Anthony, why did God decide that you must have evil in the world?
Aren't you glad you came?
Oh, I can't believe he's asking me this. And it's going to be on tape and everything, and everyone's going to listen to this. And people in America and all these people listen to this. Look at that. Why did God have to create evil? He had to create evil. Oh, we love Baruch Hashem, hey, for all those people. He gave the right answer. That's right, we have to have a contrast. Because if we didn't have evil, there'd be no such thing as good. If God says don't eat pork, what's the first thing he's going to create? Pork! Because otherwise there's nothing to talk about, right? You can't say don't keep Shabbos or keep Shabbos unless he made Shabbos. You can't say do keep kosher, don't keep kosher unless you made the idea of kosher and non-kosher. You have to make something negative so that you can actually give a directive. Remember my casino thing with Kevin that goes to the casino? I'm the employer. I want to test my employee's integrity. And I tell him, go take all these chips and bet it on black. And the smarmy guy, who I've employed in a white suit and a medallion, greased back hair, you know, hi, are you Kevin? Actually, yes, I am. Was it so that Mitchell came and told you to bet everything on black? Actually, yes, you know why? Because he's scared of you. He's scared that if you bet it on red, you'll earn all this money, be more powerful than him. My advice to you is bet on red. See you later. Right, so he goes, wow, this guy's giving me great advice to bet it on red, even though I told him to bet on black. Chips are worthless. They're pieces of plastic. What's he thinking? He should be thinking, my boss has told me to bet on black. What do I care? My boss really is scared of me earning more money than him. So really, this guy's actually giving me a great advice. How did the snake know to ask? Did maybe God tell you not to eat something? How did he know that there is a God? How did he know that they'd eat anything? How did he know that maybe there's going to be laws of kashrus? How did he know that dafka there's going to be one specific fruit? He was in on the act. He's a stooge. It's a conspiracy. You have to put the negativity in, otherwise there is no good. Good is only good vis-a-vis something negative. Black is only black vis-a-vis something white. Yellow is only yellow vis-a-vis something blue. You have to have an opposite on the other side to say this isn't that. Gosh, here we go. He had to create evil. Like all other things, these concepts, evil, where's evil encoded, people? Where does evil go to? How far into the system would you find evil? And how far up? It's got to be as far as the koichos, because bad things exist in the world intrinsically, and that therefore has to be encoded all the way to the top of Olam HaBriah. Evil must exist in the system as a prerequisite, which is why the system can't last forever. You have to fold the system. Because evil can't last forever intrinsically, because it's distance from God. And all there is eternally is God. Which means the entire system has to be folded at some stage. You can't keep it going like this. It must be temporary. He built the whole universe as an exam room. Everyone goes in and does their examination. When everyone's done their examination, you demolish the building. Now they're going to go get a job. You know, they got their degree and they're going to get a job. What do you need to keep the exam room going for? It's there for a task. Once the task is done, you don't need an examination room anymore. The evil is not knowing the answer to the questions, right, in that case. Unbelievable. That's a logical action that comes out of that sentence. Think about this. God's wisdom arraigned in the transcendental forces, the roots of all that was created, including evil, and set them in an order and system, which is why science can pick apart orders in systems. You can actually start flow of biology and maths and physics and astronomy and botany. How could you have these disciplines unless there were systems of orders to say one thing is one and not the other? There has to be an order and a system. If there's no order and a system, you wouldn't be able to define anything. It would all be random. Now, for the roots of all the creation, but set them in order and a system, which would be possible that there should pertain to them either rectification, tikkun, fixing, or spiritual damage, the opposite of tikkun, kilkul, a kink in the system. You go to a wedding, you go to bar mitzvah, you shake someone's hand, what do you say? Mazel tov. Now, I'm going to give you a little secret here. Mazel tov does not mean congratulations. Okay? What does mazel tov mean? What does mazel mean? Mazel? Constellation or flow? A constellation in Hebrew is called a mazel. A constellation of stars is called a mazel.
Nozel.
Nozel is the Hebrew word to flow. A tap. A tap is not a nozel. Barazel is a tap. A tap. In Ivrit, all these concepts in modern Ivrit were taken from Lashon HaKodesh, from the Hebrew. It means flow good, as opposed to mazal ra, flow bad. When you go up to someone and shake their hand, you're saying good flow, good constellational flow. The previous Boston Rebbe, someone asked him, what does he do for a living? He's a Hasidic Rebbe. What does he say for that, for someone who doesn't understand Hasidus? You know what he said to them? He said, I'm a plumber. What does that mean? The flow is from the koichos. Your nervous system is the koichos, right? Back into the body. Remember the picture that we showed you last time of the nerve fiber wrapping around the muscle fiber. These are the koichos. These are the primordial forces. The electricity going back and forth of the angels, and the contraction of the muscle fibre, or the relaxing of the fibre, is an effect in the world of a world of doing. In our bodies, that's how it works. We're a mirror of the entire universe. We're designed in the same system of this, as a Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, with Shad-Kai on the outside. You know, Shin-Dalad and Yud on the outside, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei in the centre. The skeleton is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. A mezuzah is wrapped up, right? like a human fetus, is wrapped in the embryological disc, the notochord is the first thing to be created, which is the central nervous system, made of skin cells. Two people who are born together with the same skin, they think the same. If they've got the same freckles, on the same, they think the same way. Chazal say that. Why? Because the cells that migrate from the skin fall in and create the central nervous system, the brain and the spinal cord. They just walk by themselves and make the central nervous system, and they roll. The mezuzah is rolled. It's not square. You roll it into a tube, because we're rolled into a tube in the womb. On the inside of the tube is Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. That's this system, right? Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. But on the outside is Shin and then Dalet and then Yud. Where's the Shin? Man breathed into us the breath of life. God breathed into our nostrils. That's the Shin. The underside of your nose is the Shin. The Dalet is the arm extended out of the body, and the Yud is Mila. Which is why when Eliezer, Eved Avraham, saw Rivka for Yitzchak, he gave her a nose ring and bangles. He decorated the Shin and the Dalet. She's going to marry the first man who had Mila on the eighth day. That's the Yud. Rivka and Yitzchak. That makes sure. People, you can't argue. Underside of your nose is a Shin, right? You breathe in through the gaps of the Shin. That's how air gets into your body, through the Shin. God breathed life into the nostril. That's the Shad of Shad Kai. Shad, just together, the term Shad, Shin Adar, means breast by itself. You suckle from that concept. Yud is Chochmah, Yud is Hashem. We suckle from God. That's how we're formed. That's how we're made. We're physical manifestations of the system. Do you understand? We are physical manifestations of the system. This is unarguable points. It's worth you coming here tonight just to hear that, no? The essence of the state of good is when a force, a nerve, has the capacity to carry the illumination of the flow. Why did the Boston Ripper say he's a plumber? If someone has a bad flow, he gives them a brocha. If the flow is bad down the nerve, he acts as a plumber, taking away the plaques. There's meant to be good flow. There's meant to be health and wealth and good things coming to him from above. But due to his sins, he's plaqued up the pipe with athronymous plaques, with limescale. And the flow that's meant to come through is only dribbling out. He comes along, goes boom, boom, you know, with a snake, one of those drain snakes, and gives a brocha. May you get mazal tov, i.e. may the flow that's coming through to you anyway be good. We muck it up by pouring sewage up the pipes. So one is, don't pour sewage up the pipes, but if you do, clean it out. And if you can't, get someone that can, who's an expert, to do it for you. He said he's a plumber. He's working on these forces coming down, make sure the force is basically just coming down the way it's meant to come down, which is always going to be intrinsically good. The opposite state of this is Mazal Ra. It's that which lacks this capacity, where this light being the influence or will of God in Kabbalistic literature, or light of God is his will manifest. Where this light is therefore withheld from a given force. God says, I am now not going to illuminate, as it were, put my will down that particular path because of what man has done. The result of the rectification of these forces, fixing these forces, is everything good that exists in the physical world, if it goes through Mazal Tov, its converse, Mazal Ra, bad flow, is the opposite. Any bad that happens is really the outcome of man's choices. The vast majority of evil in the universe is the product of man's deeds. He'll say that black and white later. When Adam was first created, with woman, Adam and Isha. Her name was Isha before the Avera. Where was evil? Where was it?
Choice.
No, choice is not evil. Choice must not be evil, otherwise it's not choice.
It was all contained within the snake.
Nope, the snake wasn't actually evil in and of itself. What was evil? It obviously has something to do with the snake, doesn't it? What led to the sin?
Doubt.
Lashon Hara.
Sorry, yeah.
Lashon Hara is evil. He said, God's scared of you. In fact, that's not even Lashon Hara, it's Moti Shemra. He lied about God. That's evil. He said, God's scared of you. You'll end up knowing good and bad like he does. He doesn't know good and bad. What does God know? God doesn't know good and bad. True and false. It's humans that know good and bad. Our goalposts shift, not his. He lied about God. That was the evil. Where was the good in the world? You're going to love this. This is really going to fit. Where was good in the world?
Else?
Nothing else except for one other thing.
Adam
wasn't good. Adam was powerful. He had to be. He wasn't good or bad. He was neutral. So the bad in the world was the Moti Shemra, the Lashon Hara against God. That was the bad in the universe at that time. Where was the good in the universe? It's going to make such sense when you get this. The opposite! What was the opposite? If evil speech is the bad, what was the good speech that was good? Bosham, what's your name?
Jack
said it! Jack said, don't do that, do this! That's the only good in the universe right now. The bad is, don't do this, do that. Is that perfect? Is that perfect? You wouldn't be able to make that up! You couldn't even make that up if you tried. The only good in the whole universe was God's directive. Here's a mitzvah. Here's access to me. Everything else is just peanut butter, lemonade, giant squid. It's all a facilitator. Adam, Eve, facilitators. The bad in the world was, you want to do that? Hey, you better do this. It's cool. And those two speech directives were loggerheads with each other. God saying, don't eat that. And the thing saying, yes, do eat it. It's a good thing. And then man is stuck in the middle going, should I listen to God saying not to eat it? Or should I listen to him saying to eat it? I have to weigh that up. And he was powerful and he had to make a choice. When he chose to do the good thing and not eat it, he would imbue the good into him as part of his decision. If he chooses the bad and says, yeah, let's give it a bash, then he imbues the bad into him as part of his decision. He now becomes a product of it. When you vote, you become a member of the party in this case. If you vote for good, you become good. When you give a coin to tzedakah, you become a bowed tzedakah. You become a charitable person. If you withheld, you become miserly. That's who you are. You make of yourself what you do. The choices and the actions that you do in your life are who you are. That's all you have. Remember what I talked about funerals? When people talk about funerals? Psh, guy had a nice car. He had a bass system. You could even come down the street. People talk about that. Do people say that? Have you been to a funeral? People discuss that. He had an excellent collection of Art Deco glassware.
Yes.
You've been to a funeral where someone says there was an excellent collection of Art Deco glassware. This is generally. This is generally what people talk about at funeral. He was a good person. He cared for people. He was there when you needed him. He was a good family man. He was charitable. He was kind. He went out of his way for others. And I'm talking about his alloy wheels. Because what really matters is what really matters. And now that he's dead, his Art Deco glassware doesn't matter. And if you think it does, you're crazy. Don't you see how this fits? funeral, that's what your choices are. You, he chose to give himself to others. Not that he amassed a lot of certain kinds of glassware. That doesn't mean he's different. When he chose to do good things, he was there when people needed him. He was involved in the community. He gave himself to others. That's who he was as a person. That's what you get to keep when you die. You don't keep the glass with the alloy wheel. Someone else will chop those. A neighbour of mine lost a family member. And a guy came straight up to him at the shiver and said, "Did you get the Chevrolet?" And he said that to me. He said that's what he said to me. Didn't say wishing on nothing. He said, "Did you get the Chevrolet?" He wasn't a family member. It wasn't as if it was up for him. He was just interested. Who did he done what? He's completely missed the point. That bloke who said that has completely missed the point. Because all that's lost is an owner to a Chevrolet, which frankly he fancies. That's what's going on. That's what's going on there. And the guy was so shocked he couldn't actually, he didn't get the Chevrolet. But he couldn't even say it. He looked at him like, is this what you're saying to me? Completely missed the point of life. We're in a system. Tonight's buzzword is, it's a system. Downflow, upflow. You cannot control the system. The system is predetermined. How much pleasure you get from a pizza, predetermined. How pizza tastes, predetermined. Nothing you can do about it. The only thing you've got are the choices you make. Of the choices that you make, the only things which are real powerful choices are a tumult between the choice to do something which is intrinsically good versus the choice to do something which is intrinsically bad. But Rabbi, there are so many thousands of things in the world, how will I ever know? Welcome to Shulchan Aruch. A lot of books. Every single possible move you could ever make, how you tie your shoes, how you wash yourself in the shower, is technically encoded to show you the best possible option should you so decide to avail yourself of it. You wash the right-hand side of your body first, because the right-hand side should come first. Upper parts before lower parts. It makes sense in the universal order. You don't want to do it, don't do it. You should put on your right shoe on first, because right always comes first. But you should tie your left first, because we tie generally the left side. We bind the left side. It's in the tefillin. Right shoe on first, then left, tie the left, tie the right. Who would care? Do you get this? Where? What other religion? Christianity. They doesn't care. This week, two Jay's witnesses came to my door. I kept them. Should I have? Oh, I had fun. They didn't know chapter and verse. They didn't know it. They don't have that in their religion. Because it doesn't matter. Big things matter. Not that we realise we're part of an electrical circuit. Every fuse, every screw, every wire matters. Everything becomes important. Everything as you walk down the road, every single thing is essential. You're essential. You're part of it. Everything you interface with is perfect. And you must interface with it perfectly to make the whole system work. You're the switch. Of course that makes sense. Please God, we'll carry on next time. It's great to see you people. Thank you so much for being here. Be very well.